Most Unitarian churches are not located near shooting wars. However, an exception to that statement occurred 100 years ago in Dublin. During Easter week in 1916, the Irish Republicans began an armed insurrection to end English rule in Ireland. The Easter Rising lasted for 6 days. The Irish seized key locations in Dublin and proclaimed an Irish Republic. 140 rebels seized St. Stephen's Green, a large rectangular park in the center of Dublin. The Irish Republicans dug trenches in the green and commandeered vehicles to build barricades. They shot anyone who tried to dismantle the barricades. The British brought in reinforcements from England. By the end of the week, 16,000 British troops had arrived in Dublin. They placed snipers and machine guns in a hotel overlooking St. Stephen's Green, making the rebel position untenable. So the Irish Republicans retreated to the Royal College of Surgeons. They remained in the Royal College of Surgeons building, exchanging fire with the British until Saturday of Easter week, when the Irish Republican commander ordered all the rebels to surrender. Now, the Royal College of Surgeons is just a few feet down the block from the Unitarian Church in Dublin. On a Sunday last August, I walked across St. Stephen's Green to attend a worship service. The church has a long and distinguished history. In the 17th century, Puritans from England came to Ireland because they believed the English Anglican Church was corrupt and unscriptural. These English Puritans established their own churches, including one in Dublin that was called Wood Street Church after the street it was located on. Many wealthy families and people in influential positions in government and professions attended Wood Street Church. Ministers with international reputations led the congregation, including a cleric named Joseph Boys. Then in 1691, a 28-year-old man named Thomas Emlyn, E-M-L-Y-N, Emlyn, came to serve as the junior minister of Wood Street Church. The young man was beloved by the congregation. He was an effective pastor. He cared about the people, got to know them well, visited them. Reverend Emlyn had doubts about the doctrine of the Trinity and the divinity of Jesus. But in his sermons, he avoided reference to these controversial topics. The senior minister, however, the Reverend Joseph Boyce, believed in the Trinity. Upset by the private theology of his young assistant, Reverend Boyce drew attention of others to the fact that Reverend Emlyn did not, I'm going to get his name wrong, it's E-M-L-Y-N, Emlyn, Emlyn. Reverend Emlyn did not believe in the Trinity. So, when word got out that he did not believe in the Trinity, clergy in the other churches in Dublin began to give sermons attacking him. To defend himself against these attacks, in 1702, Reverend Emlyn wrote a book titled A Humble Inquiry into the Scriptural Account of Jesus, explaining his Unitarian philosophy. Reverend Emlyn was the first person in the history of the world to call himself a Unitarian minister. The title Unitarian minister did not come into common usage until about 70 years later. In the beginning, in 1702, just one Irishman in Dublin said, "I am a Unitarian minister." Well, authorities charged him with blasphemy. At the trial, the judges refused the young minister's permission to speak for himself. The jury found him guilty of writing and publishing an infamous and scandalous libel declaring that Jesus Christ is not the supreme God. He was fined £1,000 and sent to prison for a year. At the end of the year, his prison sentence continued because he did not have the money to pay the £1,000 fine. And to make the story even more tragic, just before the court sentenced him to prison, his wife died, leaving him with two young children to care for. I imagine that the members of the congregation cared for the children while their minister was in prison. Now, each Sunday, the warden allowed him to preach to the other prisoners. The warden also allowed members of the Wood Street congregation to visit the prison on Sundays, and some would go to the prison to hear their junior minister's sermons. The senior minister, Reverend Boyce, now deeply regretted having made an issue of his colleague's theology. Reverend Boyce regularly visited Reverend Imlin in prison and succeeded in getting the fine reduced so that after 2 years, a judge finally ordered the prisoner's release. The young minister moved to England as soon as he was released to preach and to write. He died in England later at the age of 81. Now, after the departure of the first Unitarian minister in history from Dublin, the members of his old church slowly but steadily moved towards Unitarian theology. The church remained a stronghold of liberal ideas, and by the 1840s, the congregation regarded itself as distinctly Unitarian. One person who attended the church was a man named Joseph Wilson. He was an American who had fought in the American War of Independence. A friend of George Washington, Washington appointed Joseph Wilson as the first United States consul to Dublin. Then his son, Thomas Wilson, became a successful ship owner in Dublin. Thomas Wilson, active in the church, gave much of the money for the construction of the current Dublin Unitarian Church building, completed in 1863. In 1918, the congregation dedicated a stained glass window to the memory of Thomas Wilson. Besides Jesus, the window has images of an astronomer, perhaps Copernicus, perhaps Galileo, to show the importance of science, and an image of Florence Nightingale to show the importance of caring for others. In the 20th century, the congregation called Reverend Ernest Hicks to serve as minister of the church in 1910. Reverend Hicks served as minister from 1910 until 1962. 52 years. Reverend Hicks preached two different sermons every Sunday, one in the morning and one for the evening service. So I calculate 52 years, 52 weeks, twice a day, Sunday. That's 5,408 sermons. In one sermon, he said, "We deeply regret that our rejection of the Trinity should be a cause of dividing us from other Christians, or even shocking them. But unfortunately, the Trinity conveys no meaning to us, and it is no use pretending that it does." I have had opportunities on various occasions of discussing the Trinity with Orthodox friends. I have as yet met neither cleric nor layman who ventured to say that he could explain it. We have not arrived at the point of even approaching a full knowledge of ourselves as yet. What utter pretension and folly it is to attempt to define the infinite and eternal in some final and unalterable words. Reverend Hicks. Now, many churches in the United Kingdom are declining in membership, including Unitarian churches. One Dublin minister told the story of being a visiting minister in North Yorkshire in England. He was told beforehand, when he was invited to be the guest minister, that all the members of the congregation would get to the church on their own. However, he was told, after the service, the congregation expected the minister to drive each one of them back to their homes. And indeed, they did come by themselves, all three of them, and a dog. And he did drive them home after the service. Last August in Dublin, I attended the worship service, and I saw a healthy congregation. There were about 90 persons present at worship. Today, the Reverend Bridget Spain serves them as their minister, the first woman ever appointed to a Unitarian pulpit in the Republic of Ireland. On Monday in September, I took Reverend Spain to lunch in Dublin, and we spent 2 pleasant hours talking about the history of her church. Following lunch, I dropped her off back at the church, and then I walked a few feet down the road past the Royal College of Surgeons, where the rebels had fought the British more than 100 years ago, nearly 100 years ago, during the Easter Rebellion. After the rebels surrendered, the British executed 15 of them by firing squad. And this led to the Irish War of Independence from 1919 to 1921, and then to the partition of the island between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic, with Dublin as the Republic's capital. This partition of the island led in turn to the 30-year conflict in Northern Ireland that started in 1968, which ended when the Catholics and the Protestants signed the Good Friday Agreement in 1998. Now, each year on Good Friday, the Dublin Unitarian Church holds a reading of the names, a service at midday on Good Friday each year. Members of the congregation and the larger community gather in the church sanctuary in Dublin, and they read the names of the 3,500 people, Catholic and Protestant, who died in Northern Ireland in the conflict from 1966 to today. This Friday, there'll be an addition to this reading of the names, this annual event. In the morning at 11:15, prominent figures from politics, the media, education, and the arts will come to the church, come to the sanctuary, joining members of the congregation to read the names of the nearly 500 people, the rebels, the soldiers, the police officers, the civilians, the children, who died in Ireland during the 1916 Easter Rising. Last summer, after visiting Unitarians in Europe, I flew back to Sarasota. And as I sat in my office here in the church, starting to plan the church year in my mind, I thought of being a goat instead of a sheep. I thought about not leaving science behind when I entered this church. I thought about the Wicklow Mountains south of Dublin as the location of heaven. I thought about the first person to call himself a Unitarian minister. I gave thanks that I did not need to worry about going to jail for my beliefs. And you don't have to come to jail to hear me give the sermon. I thought about the Dublin Unitarian minister who preached two sermons each Sunday in the same church for 52 years. I wondered if he ever ran out of things to talk about. And I thought about those words of Jennifer Flagg that I read at the beginning. She said, "The one day in the Christian calendar that refused to release its hold on me was Palm Sunday. My imagination was forever held captive by the image of that uncompromising figure riding into Jerusalem on a donkey. In my imagination, I would always be somewhere on the fringe of the crowd, watching Jesus enter Jerusalem and wondering what it all meant." And I thought of Jennifer Flagg's story of finding the Unitarian Church. She said, "I had thought I was some sort of religious freak, someone who couldn't accept any sort of established belief system. But at the same time, I was unable to let the whole thing go. I just had to plod on and carry on working out my own odd, heretical scheme of things all by myself. Those of us who have done it know it's a lonely business. But here," she said, "at the Unitarian Church was a whole community of people just like me who were bound together not by a code of belief, but by a desire to follow their own spiritual path. And at the same time, give space and respect to the paths that other people were following. My excitement has not dulled with the passage of time," she said, "but it is rather refueled every time I come in here. May it be so for all of us."